FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's February 1st, 2017. That means it's time for Mickey Fulp's Major Market Monthly Review for January. Mickey, hey, it was good to see you in Vancouver, but the month is gone, and that means it's time for the review. So, hey, looking at the stock markets, well, not a whole heck of a lot of action there, but they're still going up, at least for January.
Well, I don't know. Pretty monumental month, really, Kerry. All-time highs
I know.
Set last week in all the major indices in the U.S. They backed off about 1% this week, but the Dow went above 20,000 for 3 days last week. Closed the month 19,864, up 0.5%. S&P 500 had a very good month, set record highs. Closed the month at up 1.8% to 2279. NASDAQ was the big winner. The tech sector took off the first month of the year. Closed at 56.15, once again about 1% off its all-time high set last week. Week for a 4.3% change. The Russell 2000 was basically flat this month after its run-up of, what, nearly 14% in the previous 2 months. Range-bound in that 1350 to 1380 level. Closed the month at 1362, up 0.4%.
Yeah, it's a pretty respectable performance. It's kind of a little tongue-in-cheek. Nothing happened other than the indices all set records, but, you know, okay. It's like...
Well, I missed your tongue-in-cheek, yeah, well, I guess,
it's,
Gary.
It's kind of like, you know, what happened? You know, when you look at the number, you think, oh, gee, it's only up 0.5%, but a lot happened. Yeah, the Dow broke that 20,000 barrier. I mean, it was a big psychological resistance point, but it just went through it like a knife, hot knife through butter.
And well, and it took a while, Kerry. It was flirting with that for well over, what, almost 2 months or something.
Yeah.
What it turned out was going on, which when it get close and it get close intraday, and then all the algorithm traders would come in because they had, there was a bunch of puts on the Dow at 20,000. So they kept trying to knock it down when it got close. Last week, it finally broke through. And then Trump came out with his immigration policies, and the market just went, market pundits went ballistic on this. It was like the end of the world. The Trump honeymoon's over now, supposedly. Well, markets are off about 1% this week, which is pretty negligible in the grand scheme of things.
Wait till the tax proposals come out, and then they pull out their slide rules. Well, slide rules. They plug it into their algorithms, how much the profits are going to go up on the Dow when those few companies that actually pay taxes have to pay less of them. I mean, you know, for a GE that pays no taxes, Mickey, it ain't going to make any difference. But for the few remaining companies on the Dow that actually do pay taxes, it's going to be substantial. And, you know, then the market will really take off, I believe, once that tax
okay,
program is
okay, so we're going to mark you down as February 1st, 2017. You're at least a short to medium term bull on the Dow.
I would say short term.
Okay.
Intermediate term. I think so. But hey,
okay.
Don't listen to me. I'm always wrong. That's my advice. But seriously,
okay. Well, let's get on matter. With the some of the lesser markets. So sure. We got the Toronto Big Board, January 25th, same day that all the U.S. indices set their all-time highs. The Toronto Venture Index set all-time high. Finished the month down to 2% from that high, but still up well over 0.5% for the month at 15,386. Toronto Exchange was slow and steady on the uptick After the first week pop, as we predicted, that whole scenario that I've been talking about the seasonality of Toronto Venture Exchange, worked out beautifully this year.
Really,
and
nice.
So it finished the month at 8.07, up almost 6%. But if you played the Toronto Index or specific stocks, the index from December 20th, when it hit its tax loss season low, to the 5th of January, you make 12% on your money. That's pretty good. The emerging market index had a very nice month. It was positive throughout the month, closed at 9.11, up almost 6%. We haven't seen these levels since the end of July 2015. And finally, the VIX was in a slow, low, steady decline all month, finished just under 12 at 11.99, despite the fact that it briefly popped above maybe even 13 after Trump clamped down on immigration here last week. So once again, all the noise coming out of Wall Street mainstream pundits is all about Trump. The honeymoon's over and Trump this and Trump that. And in my opinion, the Trump bump is ongoing.
Yeah, it'll continue on. I mean, look, the regulations, if he can really roll them back just to pre-Obama, that in itself would be enormously bullish. Get rid of Obamacare.
And well, especially for small businesses. Mm-hmm. So.
For sure. Not a question about it. So get rid of Obamacare, throw that in, reduce that burden on small business and on big business alike. And that's got to help employment. There's a lot of companies that would like to hire, but they don't want the added liability of having to pay for full health coverage for their new employees. They just don't want to take that on. So it's just been a major drag on hiring. Obamacare, we knew it would be when it was passed. It was just set up to be that way. So anyway, we move on to our money and currency markets here. Definitely a bearish month for the dollar.
The dollar hit an intra-month high of 103.3, and I'm looking at my weekly compendium, and that happened the week of, it happened in the last week of December. And yes, it was down from there. It closed below 100 for the first time since mid-November, closed yesterday, the end of the month, at 99.51. I notice right now it's pushing up toward 100 again for a loss of 2.8%. Euro, not surprisingly, finished at 108, a level we haven't seen since for about a year. And it was down 2.8%. 10-year treasuries, flat for the month. We've got Yellen speaking, I presume, any minute now with the FOMC meeting. So we'll see what she's going to say. I don't think there's going to be much news come out of that. And the big news for the month in terms of volatility was, once again, Bitcoin, our favorite volatility index in the world. Get this, it finished the month at 968, up 1% over the month, but in the first week of January, on January 4th, the end of the first week of January, or actually the middle of the first week, it had a daily high of 1130, which would put it right up there. Well, I guess actually it made an all-time high. It looks to me like the previous all-time high was just about that level in November of 2013. So 1130 on January 4th, on January 11th, it went down to 775. So in seven trading days, it was off 31%.
Well,
isn't that crazy?
Nuts. But the reason for the lows, the Chinese were trying their best to crack down on it. The only way that they could was they said they were going to audit all of the Bitcoin exchanges. Right. Now, they do have the right to audit exchanges within their country. Outside their country, I don't think it's going to be too successful. And they said, I don't know exactly what their basis for auditing those exchanges were. They said money laundering going on, or capital flight or something like that. So the market digested that and said, you know what? It's probably not going to make any difference anyway. So people will use exchanges outside of China, which is very simple to do when you're using the cryptocurrency. I mean, I could use an exchange outside of the US if I were so inclined, if I was fearful that the United States was going to crack down on Bitcoin. And that's what the Chinese have done. They've adapted just like anyone else anywhere else in the world would do. And Bitcoin came roaring back. So onto our metals, it was a virtually uniformly positive month for every metal that we track here, which hasn't happened in quite a while.
Well, that's certainly true. Precious metals had a very nice month. Gold was actually the laggard this month. It finished at 1210, up a little bit more than 5%. All the other precious metals were up more than 10%. Silver up to 1755. Platinum went to 993, finished for the month. Palladium finished the month at 752, up almost 11%. Palladium had a really interesting couple of days last week. Over the course of 2 days, it went from about 782 to 722. It was the largest one-day drop of $50 in 10 years, but it recovered nicely from 722, finished the month at 752. And finally, copper, quite an interesting month. Lots of stuff going on in the copper market. Finished at a 19-month high at 271. So we haven't seen this level since the end of May of 2015, despite the fact that Chinese New Year started this weekend. So we always expect that Chinese New Year to knock metals down, industrial metals down a bit, because essentially, as you know, the country shuts down for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But there has been such spot market demand that it's been driving futures contracts. The hedgies, as of yesterday, were record net long, all-time net long in the copper market. And we've combined that with a couple of supply disruptions. Ports in Chile are closed because of stormy oceans. We've got the possibility of a strike looming at Escondida, the world's largest copper mine in Chile. So you combine all that and very bullish outlook for copper, as it should be, Kerry, because copper was up a little less than 18% last year, and it lagged all the other industrial minerals and or industrial metals, I should say. And generally, when we're coming out of commodities bear markets, copper will lead. So copper's got some catching up to do here.
Absolutely. Hey, and just to bring your attention back to a thesis of yours, gold seasonality in January. Gold is usually up. Past 6 years that we've been tracking it, the only year that it didn't go up, I think, was in 2013. It was down very slightly in January of 13, down 0.7%. But every other year we've tracked it, it's always gone up in January. So this was no exception.
It was no exception. It behaved as we thought it would. And generally, once again, that month of January is always positive for the gold market. And it's the next couple of months we would expect to be positive for the venture exchange up till PDAC. So there's probably some seasonality trades still to be made here. Go to the website, mercenarygeologist.com, and see all the seasonality musings I've done over the last year and a half or so. We've covered gold two or three times, copper, oil, Toronto Venture Exchange, Baltic Dry Index, etc. So if you like to trade commodities, that might be of use to you.
Definitely. So on to the energy sector now. And so what happened here?
Well, not a lot happened. Oil was very range bound. WTI basically spent the month between $52 and $54. OPEC production cuts. So far, they've been well behaved and they've initiated these production cuts. But the wild card, once again, Kerry, and we've talked about this before, is U.S. shale oil. really lowered their costs. And we've got, as of last Friday, 712 rigs drilling, many of those about 40% in the Permian Basin. But that rig count has gone up something on the order of 50 rigs drilling over the last couple of weeks. So no matter what happens in the OPEC production cuts, U.S. shale oil is coming back very rapidly. Its production is already up well over a half a million barrels per day in the U.S. since the lows in November.
Remarkable that it's that resilient, and that the Saudis thought they were going to knock out shale oil production, and yet the opposite has occurred. So you got to wonder, I guess they're going to go back to the drawing board, the Saudis.
In oil space, there is more than one 800-pound gorilla on the block. And I think you got to put the Saudis in there, of course, U.S. shale oil, and don't forget the Ruskies. Those are the three major countries in the world for oil production. WTI is still trading at an arbitrage to Brent, about 105. Brent finished the month at 55.70. This arbitrage has been pretty steady at about 105, with some variance up or down a hundredth of a point here over the last little while. So both those oils were down about 2% on the month. Henry Hub gas did not have a good month. A lot of that has to do this time of year with weather. It lost almost 18%, finished at 312 for the month. As we come out of the winter season in the northeastern tier of states, we would expect some weakness going forward in Henry Hub gas. And finally, the big story of the month really was uranium. It was up a whopping 20% on the month, finished at 24.75. So there's no little doubt now that the bottom was hit at the end of November when it was below $18, 12-year low. We're up 36% since then. There's some fundamental reasons for rebound in oil prices. Kazakhstan announced long anticipated production cuts, 10% for this year. They blame that on uranium prices, but really, I think it's a natural decline curve of their ISR fields. And then the Trump administration, very bullish on uranium, with a number of initiatives. And so we would expect uranium to fare well going forward. You've got the new head of the DOE, ex-Governor Perry from Texas, and he's the guy that fast-tracked the approval of ISR production revival in South Texas in the mid to end of the 2000s. So very bullish on uranium going forward.
Yeah, I think that's it.
But, Kerry, that's sad. It's got a long ways to go before most of these uranium producers, especially domestically, are economically viable again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, a long ways to go, but a little help from the government might just be what they need.
Well, not only a little help, but the removal of negative things like the DOE jumping 5 to 7 million pounds on the uranium market. Yes. From government stockpiles. I think you're going to see that in too. So every time the price seemed to go up post-Fukushima, here come Obama and his DOE selling on the open spot market to support 800 union jobs in nuclear facility cleanup in Portsmouth, Ohio. Yes. I think we will see that program go by the wayside.
I think you're correct on that, Mickey. It's about time. I mean, to manipulate an entire market, to injure a market for 800 jobs. Does that make sense?
Well, it does if you were the Obama administration, I guess, and you need to carry Ohio in elections. Needed to carry the union vote in elections. They didn't pan out so well this year as Ohio went for Trump. So anyway,
Bigly.
That's water under water under the bridge now, Kerry, and uranium market's looking much better.
Yeah, I guess the manipulation is over with for now, and we will see what happens. So let's look at the ratios then. So the platinum to gold ratio, what are we seeing
there? Well, it's still below that magical number of 0.85. We are in the process of doing a new musing on platinum to gold ratios since gold was floated against the world basket of currencies in 1971 by Nixon. So it's 46-year record of platinum to gold ratios. We've been preaching this idea for quite some time now that platinum to gold ratios in this plus or minus 0.8 range were very unusual, and we now have documented evidence that in the 553 months since Nixon started taking us off the gold standard, this ratio has dipped below 0.85 for a total of 26 months. So it's quite unusual, very strong buy signal once again for platinum over gold.
Interesting. So you're bullish on platinum? You think it's going to revert back to the mean?
Well, it's certainly going to revert back. We have not calculated a mean, and the timeline for platinum to recover from this very low ratio is completely unknown to me. A lot of it depends on South Africa. 75% of the world's platinum still comes from South Africa. All I'm saying is if you're buying precious metals and you buy on dips and you hoard the way that I do it, my choice over the last 16 months, and it's 16 months running now with a ratio less than 0.85, 16 of the 26 months since 1971 have occurred in the last year and a half, let's say. So when I march down to buy a couple ounces of precious metals, my choice on dips, that is, my choice is platinum now.
So platinum is it, huh? Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially when you look at car sales, even though they say car sales have peaked in the U.S., you know, they're still at a pretty high rate. And that is the leading use of platinum, right?
Well, that's true. But bear in mind, too, that platinum is the second most important precious metal. So, you know, I buy silver every once in a while when that ratio gets out of whack. But the real goal is that sometimes when the ratio goes back down, it's too high. It's middling right now at about 70. But when it goes back down into that 50 or 55 range, then you convert your silver into gold. I would probably never have an intention of converting my platinum into gold. I'm happy with platinum as a precious metal. It's about 30% used in jewelry on a yearly basis and about 10% used for investment, either in the physical or the paper markets.
This is true. Anyways, so we find you at mercenarygeologist.com. Just tell us your Twitter feed.
At mercenarygeo. More than 60,000 followers now. The FM station is mercenarygeologist.fm, where this interview will go up into the rotation within a day or so.
All right. Cool. And financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Any questions, comments, KL@KerryLutz.com. That's KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed is @KerryLutz. And we've got about 15,000 followers thereabouts right now. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Mickey, we'll talk to you next month. Be well.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kerry.